My guest was Dr. Robert Epstein. Before we discussed his book, The Case Against Adolescence, I encourage you to get a copy of that, particularly if you're a parent, but we'll move on to other issues now. Of course, this show is dedicated to the promotion of individual rights as exemplified in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Well, the big news this past week was the not guilty verdict on 9 defendants. I believe it took place, the trial took place in Las Vegas. And 9 defendants were charged with a total of 189 counts related to tax evasion, tax charges, what have you, conspiracy and so forth. And I'd hope to get the two defense attorneys, or the defense attorney and his paralegal, Joel and Christopher Hansen, on. They were on Larry Becraft's show yesterday and also on Tom Cryer. So if you want to listen to the interview with them, I would encourage you to go listen to the archive show for Larry Becraft from yesterday and also Tom Cryer's show. So I'll recap some of that today and what I remember hearing from Joel and Christopher when I tuned into to Larry Becraft's show yesterday. Again, there were 9 defendants. They were charged with a total of 189 counts, and there was not one single conviction. There were several not guilty on all charges, and then, of course, there was a hung jury on the other charges. And so it's just, I think, a profound win for the tax honesty movement. We, I believe, are inching slower toward getting Americans to wake up and understand this massive, massive fraud that is being perpetuated by the federal government. That is the imposition of a federal income tax, which does not, in my opinion, apply to most of us. And I think this victory is fantastic. And the actual trial centered around the use of gold and silver as payment for employees. And I don't know all the details on that. I'm not going to speculate. But, of course, I've done shows on the use of gold and silver as money. And that most of you know, of course, listening to the show, that Federal Reserve notes are simply these pieces of paper that the government prints almost ad nauseum. They continue to flood the economy with these worthless notes, Federal Reserve notes, that we're forced to use. And, of course, that is the very definition of inflation and drives down the purchasing power of the dollar, while what we observe, of course, has been the increase of prices. So let me just go ahead and, to sort of recap this thing, read the email I got from Larry Becraft yesterday. And it goes like this. Joel Hansen, the Independent Party's attorney, has informed me that of the 189-count indictment against the 9 defendants, the government did not get a single conviction. Several of the defendants were acquitted. The government was unable to convict any of the other defendants on any charge, but did manage to hang the jury of 5 of the defendants. So if they choose, the government can retry these defendants. Now, I'm told that on many of those accounts on which the jury was hung, that in most cases it was like a 7-5 split or a 6-6. So that may, of course, we don't know yet, that may discourage the government from trying these cases again, because they it wasn't like it was close and they had one or two people holding out for conviction. They had, at best, half of the jurors voting or leaning toward conviction, and so that may send a strong message to the government that it's not worth trying again. Larry says, let us pray the government waste no more tax dollars on prosecuting these innocent men and women. It is the IRS and the judges in this case that deserve to be in prison. More on that in articles to come. Alex Loglia's defense attorney is Joel Hansen. Joel was able to discover that the jury deadlocked 7-5 to acquit deadlocked 7 to acquit to 5 to convict on the charges against him. We don't have the numbers on the other defendants at this time. This case has been very interesting, as it is about gold and silver dollars minted since 1986 AD. It is about the difference between a gold and silver dollar and a Federal Reserve note. It is about the meaning of words. Absolutely. In fact, all tax cases, I think, are about the meaning of words. We try to bring into the law, read the law in front of the jury, and in every case that I've been in, I've been a witness in 3 federal tax trials, and the government does everything it can to prevent that. Well, folks, I hear the music there, and so we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in here to the Peter Mac Show. Today is, of course, September 23rd, Sunday afternoon, and I was just reporting on the victory yesterday by the defense team, if you will, of Christopher and Joel Hansen. 189 counts were charged against some 9 defendants. There were no convictions whatsoever, so I want to congratulate Chris and Christopher and Joel Hansen for their fine work in defending those men and women. What I have here in terms of the names are Robert Furman. He was found not guilty on all charges. Ronald Ruggles was found not guilty on all charges. Myra Bunomo was not found not guilty on all charges. Joel Axberg was found not guilty on all charges. Deborah Rosenberg was not guilty on 8 counts, and there was a hung jury on 1 count. Daniela Ayers was not guilty on 1 count and hung jury on another count. Robert Carr, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, K-H-R-E, was hung on all counts. Lori Carr Rasmussen was hung on all counts, and Alexander Loglia was hung on all counts. So again, out of 189 indictments, the government got a fat 0 convictions. And I think this is important because what we among ourselves in the tax honesty movement constantly ask ourselves is, well, what is the meaning for this long term? I mean, people are still going to trial. Sherry Jackson's trial is coming up now. Currently, it's scheduled for September 29th, and we want to end this fraud. I mean, that's what we want to do. We won't want person after person to have to go through this. It's incredibly expensive from the standpoint of legal expenses. It's incredibly stressful from an emotional standpoint. Sometimes, of course, the government gets a conviction. I believe that the government is only capable of getting a conviction when they are able to keep relevant information from the jury. I think, unfortunately, the judge in most of these trials is not impartial, that when he instructs the jury to you must follow the law as I give it to you, is, of course, not telling the jury the full extent of their power. That is, that the jury has the right to judge on both the law and the facts. They don't have to simply follow the judge's opinion about what the law is and simply look at the facts. Unfortunately, if you voice any opinion in that direction when you're being considered as a jury member, you will not be found, you will not find yourself on the jury. You will be excluded from it. So if you are in the position of being considered for jury duty, if you've been summoned for jury duty, then I would say keep quiet and be honest, of course. But when you go in, do take it upon yourself to judge both the law and the facts if you think that's pertinent. And in particular, in a tax trial, ask to see what the evidence of the law is. And in the case of Whitey Harrell, for example, who's portrayed in the movie Freedom to America, Freedom to Fascism, Marcy Brooks, the main juror on his jury, asked to see the law. And when the law wasn't forthcoming, she was able to persuade the jury to go not guilty on any charges against him. Vernice Kuglin was acquitted, and Tom Cryer here most recently, a couple months ago, was acquitted, and he continues to do his show on this network from 2 to 4 on Saturdays. We encourage you to tune in and learn about that. So I may be naive, but I think the tide is turning, and we're starting to see more and more Americans wake up. We still have a long ways to go, and we want to educate people about the fact that the government simply cannot show where the average American, that is a person who's simply working for a wage or a salary totally within the United States, they can't show where that person has any federal tax liability. And again, if I'm wrong on that in any way, I would invite anybody, particularly from the government or any of the tax attorneys out there that think they can refute that claim, to come on the show here, and we'll have it out and see if I can be shown that I'm wrong. But I haven't seen it, and I've been looking at this issue for a long time. If you want to call in, I appreciate your feedback. Lines are wide open. The phone number here to call in is 1-800-313-9443. Again, 1-800-313-9443. One of my previous guests I've had on a couple times is John Rowland, and he has just had a number of interesting things to say. Well, let's go ahead and take a call. Larry, you're on the Peter Mac Show. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Larry. Go ahead. Larry, I heard you for a minute. If you're still there, go ahead. You're on the Peter Mac Show.
Hey, Peter.
Yes.
Larry Beecraft.
How are you doing, Larry?
I thought you were trying to get somebody else. I was just hanging on the line. Is it all right for me to just come in and tell you some of the things I've learned about this case?
Absolutely. I was, in fact, thinking about asking you to do that when I was not able to get a hold of Chris and Joel, so I appreciate your calling in, and share with us some more details, if you would.
Well, I tried to call them just a few minutes ago, but they're still out. Neither one of them is answering their cell phones.
Right.
Several years ago, I haven't got the docket sheet in front of me. I could pull it up, but it seems like it was about 2005 that the government rolled out with the initial indictment against this Robert Kahre.
Okay.
And that's the one that's spelled K-A-H-R-E.
Correct.
They pronounce it Kahre.
Okay.
This guy was in the construction business in Arizona, I mean in Las Vegas. He had a number of people that would work for him, and he got involved with the, money issue movement back in the mid-90s. And after he studied that for a while, he reached the conclusion, hey, I could be paying, rather than paying my clients or my employees in Federal Reserve notes or bank credit, mm-hmm. I could pay them in gold and silver coin. And therefore, they would have, quote, a lower dollar income and not have to pay income taxes. You know, most of these people would be, you know, your common ordinary house builders. You know, they would make maybe, you know, $10 or $15 an hour. Well, you know, if they're being paid $15 an hour in Federal Reserve notes, you know, they could be easily be paid, you know, $1 in with a silver dollar.
Correct.
And, of course, that would reduce the, you know, nominal dollar number value of what they made, and their tax liability, according to the system, would be far lower.
Right.
And that's what he started doing. You know, he started paying both his employees and such of his other people that he did business with in gold and silver coin. And he did that for a number of years, and a lot of the employees saw the value of that, and they went along with it. A couple of years ago, after he had been doing this for maybe about 6 or 7 years, the IRS executed a search warrant, and when they came in, they raided the Robert Kerr's business and had a lot of the office employees stand out in the middle of the parking lot for more than an hour in, you know, 110-degree heat.
Right.
Well, you know, that was just completely uncalled for. You know, there's no reason when you execute a search warrant for doing something like that.
Right.
Well, there was this lawyer that's a friend of mine from Southern California, Bill Cohen. Robert Kerr got in touch with him, and then Cohen and some other big firms got involved in a lawsuit, and they turned around and they sued over the execution of the search warrant. They alleged, you know, constitutional violations when they executed the warrant.
Right.
And they sued the IRS agent, and they sued the assistant United States attorney, this guy by the name of Damm, D-A-M-M. Well, that only infuriated the government when a lawsuit, a Bivens case, arises out of the execution of a search warrant. So about 2005 is when they came out with an indictment against Robert Kerr and several other people, you know, including people that, you know, were in his office and some of his employees.
Right.
The government alleged a giant conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
and then they alleged specific tax crimes for a number of these people. Well, you know, I've looked at the docket sheet, and I've seen where the Cohen came along to try to defend Robert Kerr, and, of course, he was involved in the lawsuit against the assistant United States attorney, and so, you know, there was a big battle over him being admitted. But ultimately, the government came along and amended, came out with a, you know, what you would call an amended indictment, a superseding indictment. They added a whole bunch of charges.
Right.
So when you take a look at the indictment, it's 29 pages. I emailed it to you and several others. I pulled it down early this afternoon off mm-hmm. of Pacer and mailed it around to a bunch of people. But when you sit down and you read that indictment, it charges this big grand conspiracy.
Right.
And then, of course, there's a, you know, specific tax offenses that were leveled against a number of these defendants. And, you know, what the government did, there was they started their trial back in May, and this last Monday is when the verdict came back. That would be, what, the 17th, Monday the 17th of September,
yes.
Which incidentally is Constitution Day.
Yep, indeed.
And, you know, that's when the jury came back and they were hung on a number of counts. They acquitted a number of the people on specific charges.
Mm-hmm.
And so the jury's come back and basically gutted most of the indictment. They, in interviews with the defense camp after the verdict was rendered, you know, this is what the jury had seen, that the government had in the mid-'80s, in 85 and 86, you know, Congress had come along and passed these laws. And this fellow that is being represented by Joel Hanson, I think his name is Logio or something like that, he did a lot of work into all this. You know, he was enrolled in law school part of the period of time covered by the indictment.
Right.
But, you know, he was a big student of the money issue, and he helped Robert Kerr in understanding and developing this position. But, you know, their bottom line position is that Congress came out and started issuing legal tender gold and silver coins back in the mid-'80s.
Right.
And, you know, they read the congressional debates about all this. Hey, we got a commercial coming up. We can pick up on the congressional debates afterwards.
Okay, hang with us. We've got Larry Becraft, and he's telling us about the recent 189-count all of which ended in acquittals or a hung jury. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with Larry in just a minute.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Introducing the new Blueprint Water Unit. This one-of-a-kind water technology uses natural frequencies to clean harmful toxins from your drinking water. We start with one of the best four-stage reverse osmosis systems. Then we retrofit the Blueprint water system with twin vortices. This primary technology is designed to clear harmful water memory. We then imprint Blueprint frequencies harmonic to the human body. This is the only known living water recreated by live essence infusion. According to reports from users, the water helps balance the body's internal pH. Others have said the water has helped promote weight loss through detoxification. This water is so good, your body begins to crave its healthy input. For more information, call Natural Solution toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that's 866-885-6625.
Back, folks. You're listening to the Peter Mac Show on this Republic Broadcasting Network, and I have Larry Becraft on the line with me, and he, as I said, had Joel and Christopher Hansen on his show yesterday, so he's just giving us some more details on the trial that ended in no convictions here last Monday. Larry, you still there?
I'm here, Peter. Let me pick up where we were before the break.
Please do.
You know, Loggio, I think that's how you pronounce his name. I could be dead wrong. And Kerr, they studied what Congress did back in the mid-80s about changing the monetary system, in essence. That's the conclusion they drew. Mm-hmm. Congress was going to start minting these new gold coins, and they were labeled $50.
Right.
And then they compare a Federal Reserve note, and the Federal Reserve note just says, you know, this is a note.
Right.
And to them, a note is a note. It's not the same thing as money. You know, the real money, according to them, is a gold and silver coin. So they were using these coins that were minted and sold by Treasury back in the mid-80s.
Right.
And the procedure for paying an employee that worked for Robert Kerr was this. Now, let's presume, you know, back in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, 2003, thereabouts, silver coins, you can take 12 Federal Reserve notes and get a silver dollar. That's approximate range. So if you had somebody that was an employee of Robert Kerr that was making, let's say, $48,000 per year, then divide that by 12, and you come up with 4,000.
Right.
And so they would sit there and say, well, you know, if he's only making $4,000, you know, he's not subject to withholding, and, you know, that party wouldn't be required to file income tax returns, but if he did, he wouldn't owe any income tax. So that was their theory. So they were operating in a completely different specie-based monetary system that they thought was completely approved by Congress. Mm-hmm. And they reported, everybody in the world knew what they were doing. You know, the witnesses from the state, you know, like for the Employment Commission, came in and testified. They knew what Robert Kerr was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was no secret that he was just operating on gold and silver coin. And it had a tremendous benefit for both him and his employees. Now, the government's chief rub in this case is, you can't operate off of gold and silver. And the government's theory was that, you know, if you're paying somebody with gold and silver, that really isn't money. It's merely property. So you got to take the FERN, Federal Reserve Note value, of the gold and silver that was paid to the employees, and that's what they're really making. That was the government's theory. And, of course, the trial judge bought this theory when the case started out. But as the case went along, you know, the defense camp was given instructions not to refer to gold and silver as being money, and that only Federal Reserve notes was money, and gold and silver was merely property.
Let me interject if a moment. Instructed by whom? The judge?
The judge.
Okay.
You know, I gather, the only thing I've done, I pulled down the docket sheet, and it's long, man. You know, there's got to be at least 1,400 docket entries on this docket sheet that spans a period of, it looks like, about 2 years. So the only thing I've done is I've kind of glanced through it. I learned that I think it's docket entry 346. 346 is where the superseding indictment was posted. Mm-hmm. I pulled down the superseding indictment, a couple of motions, search and seizure motions, stuff. You know, I wanted to kind of get a flavor of what the case was about by reading the pleadings. But, you know, from what I've been told from Joel and Chris, and, of course, Cohen, he's a defense lawyer from Southern California. He was involved in this case. He represented Robert Kerr. But, you know, all the defense camp, and there were also some court-appointed lawyers that were involved. And Joel said on my show, he said, hey, look, you know, every court-appointed lawyer I've ever worked with was, fantastic. He said the court-appointed lawyers in that case were fantastic. That's been my view. I've tried a bunch of conspiracy cases, had court-appointed lawyers involved. And, you know, if you got a Democratic court-appointed lawyer that works for the public defender's office, those guys are bleeding-heart liberals. And, boy, they're really wrapped up into the defense of, you know, people that we normally represent. You know, right. So they're good lawyers. But they were told, the whole defense camp was told, you can't use or describe, you know, gold and silver as being money. But then, at some stage, there was a witness that got on the stand, and the witness himself started talking in, you know, the anti-court jargon, you know, talking about gold and silver being money, until finally the defense came along, and, you know, then they started, after that happened, they started referring to gold and silver coin as being legal tender. And so they were able to work their way around what the judge had instructed them to do before trial, and, you know, the judge never made any contention about it. But that was the position of the government. Gold and silver is property, not money. Mm-hmm. And Federal Reserve notes is money.
Right.
And, of course, they have to stick with that position because that's the way they increase the nominal value of what people are paid, the number of numbers.
Sure.
So there was one interesting point of this case was a gold and silver dealer that came in to testify. And during cross-examination, you know, it was kind of, they just, you know, waded into this whole topic of money. And this is real good. You know, it's always good in a conspiracy case if the government calls a bunch of people that were allegedly involved in the conspiracy. You know, if you have a bunch of people testifying for the government, quite often you can build the defense out of the testimony of those witnesses. Yeah, well, here we got another break, Peter.
Okay.
It's at the bottom
of the
hour.
Another break.
Let's pick up that.
You know it well, Larry, from your show. We were just laughing about that. Folks, we'll be back here in just a couple minutes. This is fascinating, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Berkeleyite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Morning, neighbor.
Hey, shouldn't you be at work?
I am. As a matter of fact, I pulled another all-nighter.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, at least I'm making money 24/7, but I never have to go to work.
So, what do you do?
Not very much at all now. About a month ago, I heard about this website. It's got a funny name. It's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
That is funny.
Yeah, you can earn $1,200 to $12,000 a week starting the very first week.
Oh, is that how you bought that new mower?
Yeah, and the motorcycle I've always wanted, too. You should log on. Find out how you can become financially free.
So, what was that website?
It's www.DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Just wait, I'll go get a pen so I can write that down.
You don't need to write it down, it's easy to remember. DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Yeah, DidYouRobBillGates.com. That is easy.
It's easy, and the money is awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. We have Larry Decraft on the line, and we're discussing this fascinating legal case that just got concluded a week ago tomorrow, in which the government's 189 counts ended in no, that is, zero convictions. Okay, Larry, you were talking about their, this is Alexander Loglia and Robert Kerr, I guess, in their discussion of the, they're learning about gold and silver as money, and they were operating that way.
That's the way the business operated, and the
right.
employees would be paid in gold and silver coin, and of course that reduced, you know, down to, you know, 1/12 of, you know, the Federal Reserve value of what they were paid, down to 1/12 of that.
Right.
And, you know, that was the benefit of this whole program, and it was no secret to anybody that did business with Robert Kerr. Now,
right.
one of the important witnesses that testified during the trial was this gold and silver dealer that was called to testify, and I think he was the one that was supplying to Robert Kerr the gold and silver coin.
Now, was he called, you know, as a prosecution witness, or?
Yeah, he was called by the government, and that's what I was okay. talking about. You know, it's okay. not always nice in a conspiracy case if the government's going to use some of the members of the conspiracy, you know, in these types
right.
of cases
right.
as witnesses, because frequently you can pull out on cross, you know, a lot of facts and information that helps the defense. And that's what happened
right.
when the government calls this gold and silver dealer.
Right.
On cross, Joel said that he waded into this guy and, you know, asked him, well, you know, gee, do you file a Form 8300? Now, Form 8300 is you know, for you know, you got the CTR form for transactions over $10,000. Well, this is the same thing that the 8300 applies to gold and silver dealers. You know, somebody comes in and engages in a cash $10,000 transaction. That form is supposed to be filed.
Right.
And so, you know, the this gold silver dealer said, well, you know, hey, the only thing I never had a transaction of, you know, equal to 10,000 silver dollars or more. So I've never even really filed a form. So his testimony confirmed that he called gold and silver money, and he called Federal Reserve notes notes. And he said they are not money. And then he further confirmed the what he was doing was keeping his books and records in specie value and in specie dollars, and not the way the Federal Reserve using Federal Reserve notes as the medium of exchange, so to speak. So he confirmed the basic theory of the whole defense. So he was a very, very important witness.
Let me ask you this, Larry. Why wouldn't the prosecution vet him before that and realize that he's going to be damaging to their side when he starts spouting forth all this stuff?
Well, Peter, this is where you have, in essence, two different mindsets. You know, you have the mindset of the government, of government prosecutors. They're looking at this from a viewpoint, well, everybody's got to agree with us. Uh-huh. You know, the only Federal Reserve notes are money. You know, how could you know, it doesn't even occur to them to think in these different terms. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this movement thinks in these different terms. So it's, you know, it's two different sides of the coin. And quite often, unless you got a prosecutor that's kind of delved into the lore and the lingo and the mainstay arguments of this movement, they don't understand them. You know, I've had prosecutors in cases, come out and they barely comprehend what the movement has to say about the Brewshaver case. You know, they'll have some familiarity with the Brewshaver case, but.
Right.
You know, it goes over their head. You know, they're completely unfamiliar with the proposition. No new powers of taxation is conferred by the 16th Amendment. You know, they've never even thought about it. And of course, this movement has thought a lot more about tax questions and money issue questions than most of the people on the other side. They're in public employment that do these things like bringing criminal charges.
Right.
So, you know, my guess is, you know, not having talked to a prosecutor and just, drawing wild conclusions out of the thin air, my conclusion is that there was no way that the government even anticipated that this would happen.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
So,
now, go ahead.
Can you say something for a minute and while I answer my cell phone?
Yes, I can. So go take care of that, Larry. And what I was going to do, folks, is... John Rowland, who is a frequent, not frequent, he's been on my show a couple times, and he runs a website called constitution.org, and I just found this fascinating. John Rowland sent me an email the other day, and I'm going to read you part of it because I think this is just fascinating. You got to know what's going on here. Now, when he writes this, I'm not sure if it's he directly who did this, but he doesn't reference anybody else. So this is from John Rowland. Again, he runs something called Constitution.org. He says, I spent 1970-72 in Washington, D.C., working with members of Congress and their staffers, and have frequent contacts with them since. The subject of constitutional compliance has often come up. When I challenge the constitutionality of some proposed legislation, I often get that, quote, you are the first person to contact us with that point, unquote. Senator John Glenn, Democrat from Ohio, once admitted... Now, this is a United States senator, ladies and gentlemen, according to John Rowland. Senator John Glenn once admitted he disregards and has broken his oath of office to uphold the Constitution. On July 16, 1996, the Senate Committee on Governmental Affairs held hearings considering a bill to require Congress to specify for each new law which section of the Constitution gives it authority to pass that law. Now, think about this. This is 535 people who have taken a solemn oath to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so here, the Senate on Governmental Affairs is having a hearing on whether they should actually do that, actually require that any bill specify how it comports with the Constitution. Here's John Glenn's response. Senator Glenn spoke out strongly against this requirement, stating, quote, why, if we had to do that, we could not pass most of the laws we enact around here. Unquote. He stated that the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and others would never have been passed if Congress had defined authority for them in the Constitution. He declared, quote, Americans just want us to solve America's problems of health and safety and not be concerned if they can be constitutionally justified. That's from a United States senator, ladies and gentlemen, who's basically saying, hell no, we don't go by the Constitution. We do what we think is best for you. These are people who took an oath to do so. I think, ladies and gentlemen, that is a crime. I think John Glenn ought to be in prison. He took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and if John Roland's remarks here are correct, John Glenn ought to be in prison. He violated the Constitution willingly. He ignored it completely by his own admission. He took an oath. That was the supreme law, is the supreme law of the land. John Roland goes on to say, this is typical of the attitudes of members of Congress who, although few of them have a deep understanding of the Constitution, disregard it because of their constituents, don't make constitutional compliance a leading issue on which they decide to vote for. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you should press your congressmen to do that, and senators. He goes on, they also have on more than one occasion expressed to me, but not for attribution, that Congress passes many provisions that they know are unconstitutional. Some have estimated more than 2,000 a year, but they rely on the fact that the federal courts, and especially the Supreme Court, don't have time to hear cases on more than a few of those. In other words, their strategy is to flood the legal system with so much unconstitutional legislation that most of it will never be successfully challenged in the courts. The problem is the reason why many members of the federal bench have been pushing back, trying to avoid encouraging people to take constitutional issues to court, encouraging them to take them to Congress instead. Ladies and gentlemen, what we have is a Congress, as I've said many times on this show, that is 100% out of control. They have no regard for the Constitution. When Larry gets back on here, we'll pick up because I really want to hear the end of this, what he learned about the case yesterday. So, Larry, if you're listening, just chime back in here, Larry. Okay, go ahead, Ben.
Well, this is a very important case. You know, I defended Franklin Sanders,
right.
Vern Holland, and a few other people that were back in the late 80s and early 90s that were charged with operating warehouse banks.
Mm-hmm.
NCBA, John Granbush, John Pleasant, people like that from Denver started that in the early 80s, and they were by 84 and 85 warehouse banks were going great guns, and they were posing a threat to the system. You know, they were sitting there saying, hey, look, we're going to have people transact business with us as a bank or a warehouse bank with gold and silver coin. We're going to keep accounts in gold and silver. Well, now you have, some years later, you got Robert Kerr coming along and saying, hey, I'm going to start paying people in gold and silver coin. Well, that's a challenge to the system. You can't have paper money has always been at war with specie.
Right.
Always will be. Specie is free man's money.
Mm-hmm.
Paper money is political money. And, the people do not benefit from a paper money standard. And I think the American people are going to be learning that rule of law, that principle, here pretty quickly. You know, we're going to have some economic tragedies in the next several years as we roll into maybe a new currency with the Amero.
Right.
But, gold and silver is the monetary system that's the free man's money, and that's what we should be gunning for. Robert Kerr had the fortitude, the interest, the desire, the commitment to implement that in his daily life. And, of course, the government comes along, and you can't have somebody, just like these warehouse banks were springing up, you can't have somebody like Robert Kerr coming along and putting his money on, putting his business on gold and silver coin. And I think that was a big motivating factor in the reason why the government attacked him. You know, he back in the, it seems like it was 2001, he learned that he was under criminal investigation. He also learned that the investigation was dropped. He concluded that, hey, the government's reached the conclusion that everything I'm doing is right.
Right.
But, nonetheless, they came along. You can't have in this competition between gold and silver and paper, there's always going to be a war going on, and paper's going to strike back.
Right.
And paper struck back against Robert Kerr. But, when the average American, the typical juror that sat on this case, the typical citizen of of the District of Nevada, primarily people from Las Vegas, when they sat on this jury and they heard the whole story, their ultimate conclusion, this is what they told the defense. Hey, we see nothing wrong. You know, the government, in essence, told these people that they could operate that legal tender, that a dollar was what the Treasury was meaning and selling in, back in the mid-'80s and still does it today, pursuant to the law of Congress. And furthermore, a Federal Reserve note has never been statutorily declared to be a dollar itself.
Right.
And so these people just reached the natural conclusion. These people didn't do anything wrong. And that's the reason why they acquitted a number of people, and they refused to find anyone guilty.
Exactly. Well, and you know, Bernard von Nothaus with the Liberty Dollar is in some sense being attacked also because of the use of the Liberty Dollar. As you said, all these things are threats to the system, which thrives on the use of the Federal Reserve notes, and you have sent me recently a number of articles, which you sort of alluded to a minute ago, in the dangerous situation that we are in right now with the dollar and how it may fall off the cliff, so to speak, in terms of its purchasing power and so on. And, governments, I don't know, Larry, as I said at the outset of this, I think the government, I may be naive, time will tell, but I think the government is realizing that more and more people are figuring out that they're running a scam with the tax issue and with the money issue.
I hope they do. Hey, Peter, my purpose is not to come in and nosy into your show.
No, you didn't nosy in. I welcome your thoughts on it. In fact, I want to ask you to talk about something else on it,
well,
too.
How about what you were talking about just a minute ago about John Rowland's email to you?
Well, let's get to that, but let's just conclude one more thing with this case, which I think is relevant for people to know, and that's what I heard on your show, if I wasn't mistaken. This prosecutor who was being sued... By the defendants prior to the indictments coming down, prior to any indictments coming down, he has already got a suit against him, and the defense goes to the judge and says, hey, wait a minute, there's a conflict of interest here when the guy that's prosecuting
client. First, it was the government complaining about the conflict of interest of Cohen, who initiated the lawsuit, and then he ends up coming into the case where the indictment's been returned. He starts defending one of the defendants, and the government says, we need to get him out of here, conflict of interest.
Well, wait a minute. You clarify that for me. Why does the government allege that Cohen's involvement is a conflict of interest?
Beats me. The government does that to me, too. You know, they can come along and hurl accusations. You know, it's just over the last 10 to 15 years, the government's come along and started challenging defense representation of particular people. And it's something that's routine. You know, I think the point that you're getting ready to make is, how in the world can they sit there and say that Cohen's got a conflict of interest when, you know, the guy that's prosecuting the case has been sued by the defendant? Doesn't he have the same conflict of interest? Is that
absolutely
the point you're going to make?
And the judge, and of course the judge ignored that, listened very, I'm sure, calmly to Mr. Hansen's claim, and then promptly said, I overruled your objection, right?
Yeah.
Yep, and so the prosecutor, this fellow by the name of Damm, continues and tries the case. And of course, we don't know where that leaves the lawsuit against him now. I suppose that's still waiting to be heard.
It may pick up. You know, the defense knows from interviewing the jurors that the split was generally, depending on what the charge was, it wasn't 10 to 2 or 10 to 1 one way or the other. You know, it was in that medium range, 7-5, 5-7, that type of split on most of the charges, especially the ones that they were hung on. So the government's got to make a choice now, there's been a mistrial declared in reference to the hung counts.
Right.
So, the government's got a choice. Do we go back to fight this for another 4 months, maybe?
Right.
That's the next
choice.
But I think
it's important. I just want to make this final point, Larry, and then we'll move on to John Rowland's emails. These people in the prosecution are human beings too, and they do things where they lash out, like you indicated, apparently making the employee stand in the 106-degree heat while they did the search when they had no water or shade from the sun. And this guy's being sued, and he's probably thinking, by golly, I'm going to do what I can to punish these people, and they'll learn if it's, you know, whether they should sue a government official. I don't know what goes through his head. Obviously, I'm speculating here, but you know,
they're not above being vindictive. Anybody sued is going to be angry about it. And
Pardon?
I think that's a natural reaction. So,
sure.
You know, I can't just sit here and say, you know, this guy just ignored it all when he was
sure.
being sued. Now he's got to defend himself in a civil suit.
Right.
And the civil suit was put on hold while the criminal case was pending. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot going to happen. A lot of decisions are going to be made over the next maybe a couple of weeks, next month or two. You know, is the government going to try to do something with this criminal case all over again?
Right. The point I want the listeners to pick up on is the judge should have found another prosecutor to do the case rather than this guy. There's other people they could have pulled out of the system to do it.
So true.
Go ahead, then. You heard my remarks, my reading of portions of John Roland's email about the senators, particularly John Glenn, admitting that they just disregard the Constitution because they claim that's not what their constituents want.
Well, let's pick up with that after the break.
Okay. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back with Larry Becraft here in just a couple minutes.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Attention, this is an RBN financial news bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Okay, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have Larry Becraft on the line. Before we resume with Larry, let me remind folks, we're going to have Jeffrey Dickstein on next week, and he is the attorney representing Bill Benson, who wrote The Law That Never Was, the two-volume treatise which shows, at least he alleges, that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified. So we're going to discuss that in the ongoing case next week. So tune in next week for that show. Larry, are you
Peter, back? Let's pick up where we were before the break. We're talking about the statements made by John Glenn that, we can't make a determination as to what a particular law, what provision of the Constitution is based upon. They didn't want to do that.
Right.
Well, while this is what I have learned from my years of practice and studying of the United States statutes at large. I think that there's a cadre of legislative draftsmen that know the Constitution. They know how to draft laws. They're fully aware that inside the states of the Union, that Congress's power has a few well-defined powers pursuant to the Constitution. However, within the jurisdiction of the United States, which is Washington, D.C., the federal enclaves in the states and the territories and insular possessions, the courts have held that Congress has the power of a state legislature. So I think that the legislative draftsmen, they can sit there and whenever a congressman comes along and says, oh, well, let's do this, that, and the other, what you will find is that the legislative draftsmen are going to be making the decision and drafting the law to make it either pursuant to a well-defined congressional constitutional power, or they're going to make it jurisdictional. Now, one of the big things that's real difficult for people to determine and detect is how do you determine which laws are within the jurisdiction of the United States, that's where they have application, and whether or not they have application inside the states. Well, I've engaged in a very detailed study, starting with Volume 1 of the Statutes at Large, going all the way up to Volume 120 of the Statutes at Large. And, I'm isolating all those specific spots where you can plainly see that a law is applicable inside the states. And there are, once you start taking a look at all these, like the finding these acts where they specifically say this law shall apply within the states of the Union.
Right.
And there are some of those. There's statutes that are directly connected to Congress's power over interstate commerce. But, one of the things that I have found is, and this probably explains the reason why there may not be any necessity for us to have a law. I would like such law. I remember when Congress was proposing this, I was in favor of it. At least in the preamble to any given law, Congress specified, identify the provision of the Constitution that's the basis for the particular law. That would be great. However, I dare say that if we had such law in effect, most of the laws would be found to be based upon Congress's power within the jurisdiction of the United States, i.e. the territories and its possessions. But I think that it's already there when you catalog and throw to one side all the laws that clearly, either by interstate commerce or by a specific provision that says this law shall apply in these areas, like the states. Once you catalog and analyze all of that, and then you take a look at these other laws that have an absence of those provisions, I think that is the way that we cut and separate the laws that are jurisdictional and the laws that apply within the states.
Thank you for your comments, Larry. I wish we could take it up and discuss that more, but I'll look forward to listening
Great
to your
Peter.
Show next week. We'll be back next week, folks. Thank you for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. And, again, I'll have Jeffrey Dickstein on here with me next week and representing Bill Benson. So tune in next week.
True.